Liberal or Liberal podcast. Enjoy the show.
One of the, you and Jack on Thursday, I think it was last week, announced your new budget plan. One of the aspects of which you're going to try to apply and make sure that Delaware is getting all of the matching funds it would need or is eligible for from the federal government. Mm-hmm. Do you have any specific instances where we're not currently receiving federal funds where we should be?
Well, a couple of, we mentioned faith-based organizations
right.
is one. There are other programs like the CHIP program where there are state dollars that need to be expended in order to get the federal dollars, but the federal share is for CHIP is actually beyond matching. It's a 60% contribution. So when you're talking about a kid who's in total, the cost of insuring kids is fairly low because there are exceptions, but generally they're healthier and don't get sick a lot. So the very rough ballpark number that they use for insuring a kid for the CHIP program is $1,000, and the long term benefit of that is some huge multiple of that.
Mm-hmm.
And our CHIP enrollment is among the lowest in the country because we don't make any affirmative effort to sign kids up. And so we are one of the only states in America that actually sends federal money back to the CHIP program that's gone unused. You may remember a year or so ago when there was a big controversy at the federal level about the CHIP program.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Some states were reporting running out of CHIP money and there was a real crisis because they weren't going to be able to cover kids.
Mm-hmm.
We never had that problem because we don't even come close to using the federal funds that we're entitled to, and I think that's a shame. I mean, if you go home, not that I would ever let these guys watch television, but if I went home right now and turned on Channel 12 in Sesame Street, I absolutely guarantee you that within an hour, an ad would come on for the Pennsylvania CHIP program.
Yes.
Okay.
And they do print advertising, radio. They just make enormous efforts to sign kids up. They've expanded their CHIP program to allow kids whose families are over the income level to buy into the program, which is a pretty nominal cost, but lets those families that are, doing better than 200% of poverty but still can't afford to pay for health insurance out of pocket, gives them an option so they can at least get their kids covered. So, those are two examples where I think we can do better. And there are others, and part of what Jack and I were talking about was the fact that we wouldn't even necessarily know as individuals what we're missing out on, but there are people we can bring in to point us to, here are some programs where you're not getting what you could be getting.
Okay.
One of the one of the crises or problems that have plagued Delaware in the last couple of years, or the controversies, has been the DPC, the Delaware Psychiatric Center, and also the prison system in general.
Mm-hmm.
As Lieutenant Governor and working with Governor Markell, how would you change and reform the DPC and the prison system in general?
Well, there were a couple of different problems. Let's talk about the psychiatric center first. I think there were two separate issues with the psychiatric center, one of which was the real and I think more significant issue of things were going wrong there and they need to be addressed. And then there was the second issue of how did the state government respond when some of those issues came to light. And the second part of that, the response, I think that clearly even the folks in state government would now acknowledge that it wasn't what it should have been, and when you're confronted with a problem in your agency, you try to be upfront about it, try to, if there is a problem, acknowledge it and deal with it. We've had that happen a couple times in the insurance department.
Right.
I mean, we've had things that didn't go the way we wanted them to, and when that happened, then we said, okay, we didn't do this the way we'd like, and let's try to fix it. And that's, again, that's the perception part of it, but it's not unimportant because I think it undermines people's confidence in and how government works. As far as the larger issue, we need to find a way within the rules that we have to follow for the state's civil service system to be able to better manage the folks who are working in the psychiatric center and to, if necessary, bring in people who can do the job that needs to be done if the folks there aren't. I mean, some of the solutions that I heard tossed out for the psychiatric center, make a smaller building or bigger building or something. They're suggesting changing the physical facility was going to deal with the problem. And I'm open-minded but skeptical about the idea that if you just, lock off a couple of wings, that's going to fix it. And then there have been talks about, again, sort of reshuffling the very top-tier organizational structure. I mean, I think the to me, and I don't work there every day, but to me, it looks like the core of the problem is that these are very difficult jobs to do for the people who are doing them on the front line. They're very challenging, and there seems to be a persistent problem there that some people aren't doing their jobs the way that they should, not all, but some, mm-hmm. and there don't seem to be appropriate consequences when people aren't doing their jobs right, and people who haven't acted appropriately towards patients are allowed to continue having access to patients and continue doing the jobs that they were doing. So there have to be, I think it's largely a management issue. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it takes a while to learn how to manage staff under the state civil service system. I mean, I inherited better than 80 employees in the insurance department mm-hmm. who had worked there before I got there when I got mm-hmm. elected, most of whom intended to be there after I was gone.
Right.
And, there's a real labyrinth of state personnel rules that are there for a good reason, but mm-hmm. that it really takes a while to figure out how to get people doing what they should be doing, mm-hmm. Within those rules. And I think that's really the challenge at the psychiatric center it's going to be tougher than the people who have thrown out these broad brush solutions would make it sound, because right. I really don't think it's a matter of establishing a board or having somebody with X on his resume versus Y at the very mm-hmm. top. I think mm-hmm. there are some real front line issues right. that need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
With the prison, there are a lot of challenges with the prison system. One of which is, and one that I'm particularly concerned with, the absence of appropriate reentry education and training for the vast majority of inmates who are coming back into the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to Carl Danberg, who's the current commissioner, and who I think actually, I was just mentioning a minute ago, that I think it's a good thing when government officials are candid and forthcoming about shortcomings in their agencies,
right.
and I think you can say that about Carl. That he's right. pretty, he's pretty candid about what they're doing well and what he thinks they're not doing well in the prison system. And what he will tell you if you ask him, they're not doing well, and it's largely a funding issue. Is they're not providing appropriate drug treatment to inmates who are in there for short-term periods. They have a very good program for inmates who are in for 18 or more months called the KEEP program.
Right.
But if you're in for less than 18 months, which many first-time offenders are, mm-hmm. there really is no effective drug treatment program. So it seems, I'm not even sure what the right word is, but a horrible paradox that you have to commit a crime serious enough to be in for a long period of time in order to get appropriate drug treatment.
Right.
In terms of basic education services, getting an inmate a GED before they come back into the community, specific job training services, there's very little of that happening right now in the prisons. And again, it's largely, Carl says he'd love to do it, but if he doesn't have the resources to do it, then he can't. And those are also things that, dollar for dollar, the investment on the front end tends to pay off many times over on the back end, because if you can get your recidivism rates down, given what the cost is of having an inmate incarcerated for a year, mm-hmm. You've done a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that is that has to be a major priority, is helping folks who are coming back into the community come back as productive citizens with job skills that they can put to use. The healthcare issue is a separate and also important issue.
Is there anything else I can get for you?
I don't think so. Thank you.
We need to figure out the current vendor who's providing medical services at the prison is clearly not getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to immediately take a look at whether there are other good alternatives out there in terms of vendors, because we've had other vendors in the past, and frankly, they haven't exactly set the world on fire either.
Right.
So, we need to figure out if there is a better alternative to the current vendor, whether that is a different vendor, or some folks have suggested that we might be able to set up in-house our own healthcare system in the prison. That I would want to see where that had been successfully done
right.
somewhere else. I think it's a great idea mm-hmm. in theory, but the logistical challenges are tremendous, and I
right.
would want to, that's something that I would want to see I would want to see that done successfully at another facility and know how it was made to work before we tried that here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One of the issues I know in terms of transitioning from prison back into the community is not just job skills, but being able to get a job. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, come out of prison, you certainly have a record, and that can be a difficult thing, a real challenge in terms of people getting a job. So I know that there are a lot of concerns about, you know, ways to... or at least a pathway to help, you know, I guess expunge a record, mm-hmm. so that people, you know, can sort of start clean and start over again.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts about that kind of process, or making that work a bit better for people?
Well, I think there are a couple different things to look at in that area, one of which is you can never... I mean, if someone asks you on a job application if you've ever been convicted of a crime,
mm-hmm.
There's not really any way of getting around that. I mean, you can say that you were pardoned.
Right.
And expungement is usually for an offense that for some reason should never have been on,
mm-hmm.
in the first place. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, I don't think there are really any sort of bureaucratic, you know, tricks or mechanisms that we can use to allow someone who's committed a crime to pretend that it never happened. Well, what we can do and what we should do is, number one, take a look at whether, we have a huge swath of jobs in Delaware from which people are essentially disqualified if they've ever committed, in some cases, any crime, and in some cases, a felony for.
Right.
And, you know, I do think we need to go back and look at that, and there are some types of jobs for which that's entirely appropriate. But I'm not sure that every single job in the Delaware Code where we've gone and done that is one where that makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to look at, you know, whether we're excluding some people who are coming out of prison from jobs that there isn't any reason to exclude them from, and mm-hmm. where they could, you know, get some employment. And then the other thing is that and I think this may have been part of what you were driving at with your question, I mean, there is more than having the minimum job skills involved in getting a job, and we do need to figure out how we can help people just in terms of the mechanics of hunting for a job and finding an appropriate job, putting together a resume, doing a job interview. I mean, there are things that you know, for some folks who have been lucky enough to, have a different path, then that might sort of all come naturally as part of what you get taught in high school or in college or whatever. But if you're coming straight out of being incarcerated, that type of thing may not be obvious. And we need to figure out a way to help people with the mechanics of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Anything else?
Yeah, the other question, one of the things that has been of huge interest to people at Delaware Liberal is the whole business of open government.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I guess, the real focus over the past few years has been about the legislature, and I guess there are two questions. One is, do you think that there's anything that, you might be able to do to help influence them, realizing that, it's just going to be pretty much influence to get them to open up some of their processes and business, business discussions. And then secondly, what would you do to sort of expand on the open government philosophy in your office as Lieutenant Governor?
Well, the answer to your first question is that I assume I was one of the very first elected officials to endorse Senate Bill 4, Karen
mm-hmm.
Peterson's bill to extend the Freedom of Information Act to the General Assembly, and I certainly would hope to do whatever I can to help her build the minimal additional support she needs to get that
mm-hmm.
bill moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's really right on the cusp of having enough votes to get it voted on and getting it passed. And, I don't want to jinx anybody, but, looking at the way some of our state Senate races look to be playing out,
mm-hmm.
I'm very optimistic about the possibility that Brian Bushweller, who's been an advocate of Senate Bill 4, Bethany Hall Long, who's been an advocate of Senate Bill 4, they're going to be, I hope and expect coming into the legislature.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. I think that will be, that will be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But now anything that I can do to help her, I will certainly do. And, one thing that I haven't been able to do over the last 4 years is build some consensus behind some bills that people, sometimes it's been Democrats that I needed to work on, behind some bills that people just never thought we were going to get passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I do have something of a track record in terms of being able to put together, you know, coalitions to move some of these difficult bills forward, and I would certainly hope to help her with that.
Okay.
And as far as, you know, what you can do unilaterally from the Lieutenant Governor's office, you know, open records has been a real priority for me in the insurance department.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anytime that we get a FOIA request in the insurance department where the intended answer of anyone, you know, working for me is anything other than, yes, come get it, then they're required to send that up to my office, because
right.
if, you know, in the rare instance when that happens, I want to know what the explanation is.
And, mm-hmm.
and the only time that I can think of that we've ever not wanted to provide documents to somebody in the insurance department has been when there was an investigation going on of someone. Yeah, an ongoing investigation of someone where we hadn't made any determination yet
mm-hmm.
of whether they had done something wrong or not. And just as with police investigations and other things, you don't want to put someone's, you know, business out on the street if
right.
it, you know, if it may ultimately turn out that they've
right.
done nothing wrong. So that's been the one instance where we've said, and even in those cases we've said, you know, let's wait, and if
have
it turns
the request
out that
be
there's
pending.
Been, you know, been some action taken, then you're welcome to everything in the file. But
mm-hmm.
I think that's the one instance where we've had anything other than, you know, the attitude of come look at what we've got, because it's just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do, and B, just from a purely selfish, practical level, you always almost end up worse off trying to
right.
keep things from people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might as well put things out there
right.
and let the cards fall where they may.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, like I said, I wish I could say in 4 years that nobody in my department has ever made a mistake or ever done something they shouldn't have, but, you know, people mess up sometimes.
Right.
And when that happens, you know, deal with it, and you move on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. And I guess my only last question is, you know, we have quite a few Delaware readers, and a lot of people are very interested in your race in particular. You know, just yesterday, I think that there was some discussion and some concern that your race was a lot closer than it turned out to actually be. That question would be, you know, what is it that you would like to ask of us? I mean, what should we do to help you?
If you could find out that I had a giant trust fund that I didn't know about.
Oh, okay.
Or I could just go take a couple hundred thousand out of the bank, that would be helpful.
Okay.
And that might cause a panic, so.
Sure. You know, obviously, as the days wind down,
mm-hmm.
the hands-on aspect of mm-hmm. the campaign becomes more and more important, and
mm-hmm.
having people to make telephone calls, and you know, not just on election day, but before election day, you know, just do the sort of, you know, core volunteer work that Democrats have always done better than Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, it's been what has made up
mm-hmm.
the financial disadvantage that we're usually operating under. So, and Jack and I are working together at this point,
good.
And his volunteers and my volunteers are all over at the party headquarters. You know, I think the first truckload of Markel Den flyers and signs arrived yesterday.
Oh, great.
And
I
haven't even seen them.
Yeah.
But you know, so anything, you know, that folks can do on that front really is significant. I mean, I was just with Jack yesterday, and he was telling a group of college students that he had 900 volunteers out on the street on primary day working for him, and that he's convinced that, you know, especially given the narrow margin that he won by,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, that
the
volunteers were a big part of the reason. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm winning, you know, by a fair amount now, but those numbers can change in the blink of an eye.
Right.
And you know, the negative ads are coming, and there will be a lot of them. And, you know, it could be a much closer election by election day. So, you know, we need to get organized now so that if it does turn out to be a close election, that we come out on the
mm-hmm.
On the right side of it.
All right.
Good.
Well, thank you
good.
Very much for joining us.
Sure.
We appreciate
and thanks.
It.
Thank you for bringing your son out for us to meet.
Yeah. You didn't really eat very much.
Bring your staff.
You didn't eat very
thanks.
Much, my friend.
Well, thank you very much, man.
This has been a DelawareLiberal.net production. I'm Liberal Geek. Thanks for listening.